This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. This is episode number 10 of the Until the Whistle podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Myers, and we're back at it again. Thank you, as I said, for tuning in. Hopefully you've enjoyed the episodes thus far and are enjoying some of the content that we have out here on the Yak. Really trying to establish a different, you know, type of medium out there for people to consume content. I've seen differing opinions on the offering, but I think if you take some time to delve into kind of what's out there and what we're bringing, you know, forth content wise, there's something, I think, a little bit on there for everybody, and just something really good to go. The temperature's starting to drop here, and so I'm definitely going to continue to find me a nice whiskey to drink each night. That I'm recording tonight. I'm going back to Elmer T. Lee, one of my favorites. And yeah, it's good stuff. I don't know if anybody's ever had Buffalo Trace, but the Buffalo Trace Distillery is who makes Elmer T. Lee in Kentucky. And it's a really good whiskey. I think I told this story before, but I got really put on the whiskey by my boss when I was working out in California for a few months at one point. And my boss out there was a big whiskey lover. And we went to, we were working in Santa Rosa, California. So about an hour north of San Francisco. And so what I would do is, this is when I was living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I would fly out of Dallas on like a Sunday night on one of the latest flights out of there. And then work all week. And then we were on 410, so had every Friday off. And if I stayed around, I would check out some of the wineries and distilleries in the area, breweries rather, in the area, because they have some really good breweries and wineries in Sonoma Valley. But when I would fly back, if I wasn't going to stay through the weekend, I would fly back on a red eye. Late Thursday night, and then I'd be back in Dallas Friday morning. But one of the things that my boss used to like to call whiskey was his dessert. And so we would have a long, you know, maybe 10, 12 hour day of work. And there was a whiskey bar that was across the street from the hotel that we would stay at. And so it was really cool because what they had was like a whiskey passport. And every time you drank a whiskey, you got a stamp for it. And so our goal for the whole time that we were out there during that project was to get through the passport and get everything stamped off. And then once you did that, you got to sign it. You got some kind of little placard that they kept there in the bar. So it was a really neat place. And that was where I kind of was introduced to whiskey. For whatever reason, in college, I wasn't a brown drinker. Like, I would always drink vodka quite a bit. And then there was a time where there was these drinks called Incredible Hulks. And thinking back on it, they were pretty nasty. But the drink would be green because it mixed, I want to say it mixed like Hennessy and this drink called Hypnotic. And so the brown and the blue mixed together made a green drink, and we called them Incredible Hulks. And so we would drink those after games sometimes. And so I think I kind of wore myself out on that. I think I started getting headaches from vodka for some reason. And so I just switched over to whiskey. And so now I pretty much only drink whiskey neat. I drink coffee black. And I drink cold ice water, and that's pretty much it. I'm not a big juice guy, not a big soda guy. May do like Jack and Coke from time to time if there's nothing else available. But for the most part, I drink my whiskey straight. So, or neat rather. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. That was just something that was kind of on my mind. Here we are sitting. It's what, Thursday, November 8th when I'm recording this. So most of you probably hear this on Friday. but this is also the second weekend of deer hunting season. And my family and I have some land in East Texas, not too far from Carthage. Shout out to Keontae Ingram. And so I'm going to be in a deer stand this weekend. I think probably by the time the Tech game starts, we'll already be out for the evening, especially with the getting darker sooner than it has been. But so hopefully I'll be able to catch the game while I'm down there. But yeah, this time tomorrow I would have been in a deer stand for a few hours. Myself, my dad, and my brother go every year. This year, my grandfather is going to tag along with us. And so my dad, my brother, and my grandfather, my dad and I are leaving in the morning for East Texas. My brother is going to meet us there because he lives in Dallas. And then we'll get into the deer stand this weekend, or I guess Friday night for our first hunt of the weekend. So hoping to catch me a buck, if not, maybe a doe, but I'd like to get some deer meat for the year. So, you know, y'all wish me well, and I'll be enjoying the elements a little bit, but that's not what you guys are listening to this podcast for. You probably want to hear my take on the West Virginia game. Man, like another frustrating loss. Two games in a row now that we've dropped. Ranking has now dropped to number 19 in the college football playoff. So it didn't really drop that much from what we were ranked, because it was a hard fought game. Ended up being a 42-41 loss to West Virginia. So we're now sitting at 6-3 overall and 4-2 in the conference. And I don't know. It's kind of frustrating because it just seems like we still can't put together a complete game on both sides of the ball. The offense is really clicking now. So the one thing that, you know, we were, giving, Tim Beck and even Tom Herman a lot of gaff for earlier in the year was the offense. And, you know, the offense went out this game and put up 520 yards and 41 points. And anytime you do that, that should be good enough for a win. Even controlled the time of possession, 34 minutes to 26 minutes for West Virginia. Did lose the turnover battle 1-0. So, you know, that's always going to have a negative impact. But just seemed like the defense could never get a stop when we really needed it. I think they did come up big on fourth down at one point during the game, but it just always felt like this was going to be one of those games where, you know, the last team that had it was going to win the game. And so it ended up being a pretty wild game, a game where West Virginia pretty much did whatever it is that they wanted to do. They rushed the ball for 232 yards. So that was 33 attempts, average of 7 yards a rush, which is just inexcusable. And then when you combine that with someone that has the arm like Will Grier, he added 346 yards through the air. And when you look at at the tally, when it was all said and done, West Virginia rolled up 578 yards, almost 600 yards of offense against us in 26 minutes. And this team continues to find ways to lose games that you would think they would win. And now the issue has, you know, completely shifted. Coming into the season, the strength of this team was the defense, and the questions were all on offense. Or, you know, the major question mark was, you know, offensively, could this team, you know, match up and against some of the more against some of the opponents in the Big 12 that have higher firepower. And, you know, sure enough, we can put up points with anybody. It just seems like we can't stop anyone. And it's become really, really frustrating, to see the defense regress in the way it has. And I think people probably took for granted what was coming back in the way of the talent that was going to be on the defense and, you know, the ability to replace a Puna Ford or a Malik Jefferson even Deshaun Elliott, Holton Hill, those guys, you know, all logged some serious snaps for Texas in the prior years and were huge components of the defense and huge components of the defense success. You think about the knack that Deshaun Elliott had for either just being in the right place at the right time or creating turnovers. And, you know, how much of a stalwart up front that Puna Ford was, and then Malik Jefferson there in the middle playing, you know, his best ball his senior year. You effectively lost someone at every single level. And while Holton Hill ended up being suspended from the team and not finishing out the year, you know, it was huge to have him. He was one of those guys where if he got his hands on a ball, it was going the other way for six a good number of times. And so, you know, it's just been difficult to watch the evolution of this team kind of oscillate from, okay, the defense is kind of keeping us in it, to now the defense has actually become the Achilles heel of this team. And, you know, that's really tough to say. That's really tough to be in the Big 12. You know, when you kind of glance through the box score, Will Grier had an amazing game. He threw for 346 yards, had three touchdowns, and then, of course, you know, rushed for the two-point conversion at the end. But he's not even really a mobile quarterback, you know? So it's just there's things that would happen in this game that, you know, just kind of give you pause for concern. And when you flip – cause for concern, rather. And when you flip to the other side of the ball for the Longhorns, offensively, with the type of game that they put up, there's no way that shouldn't be good enough to win. Sam Ellinger has truly come into his own. He is the guy for this team and the offense that they're running. He's been extremely poised. Once again, took care of the ball, was 25 for 36, had 354 yards passing and three touchdowns. And then he had another 11 carries for 52 yards and a touchdown on the ground. And, you know, that was complemented by Trey Watson having 14 carries for 80 yards and a touchdown. And then Keonta Ingram even got 13 carries. Didn't have much room when he was in the game, but I think that they were kind of keying in on him, knowing that, you know, he was someone that we wanted to get going. And so, you know, it just seemed like Trey was having a little bit more luck than him. But all in all, I mean, it's 39, you know, carries offensively for 166 yards and two rushing touchdowns. And then receiving wise, you have Lil Jordan doing his thing. I mean, he's just really grown into his own. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens, you know, going into the offseason. I have a tough time seeing him come back. And, you know, I have a tough time seeing Colin Johnson come back. And not because they're surefire day one picks or anything like that, but, you know, both of them have the build, the skills, the physique to where they could be, you know, second, third, maybe even second to third round picks, I would say. And a team will take a chance on them in that area and they could have very productive careers. You know, I don't really see a ton of benefit of either of them coming back just from the standpoint that, you know, there's not a whole lot more that they can accomplish personally. And I think that's sometimes, you know, lost in the translation of, you know, what college athletes are asked to do. For guys their build, I mean, sure, there's some things that they continue to refine. But I think from what they've put on tape, for the most part, scouts have probably seen all that they need to see from the two of them. You know, you know, again, I'm not a scout, so I really don't know, but I'd be hard pressed to really see what either of them could do with what they've put on film thus far this year. And if they continue to finish out the year relatively strong, I could really be hard pressed to see what they would stand to gain for coming back. And that would be a huge blow to this team offensively. Now, granted, the wide receiver core is probably the deepest on the team next to DB. But yeah, I mean, look, Jordan goes out there and you know, LJ puts up 9 receptions, 143 yards, 1 touchdown. You had Devin Duvernay have a 100-yard game. I'm not sure when the last time we had two receivers eclipse the 100-yard mark, but he had six receptions for 100 yards and that 48-yard touchdown to seemingly put us up towards the end of the game. And, you know, even Colin kind of got into it where he had more of a possession type game. He was 4 for 47. Trey Watson had a couple, including the 32-yard touchdown reception. And then Andrew Beck even had a few, but, you know, had a few that I'm sure he would like back that, you know, a couple of times he just didn't whip his head around quick enough. But it just, you know, again, just a disappointing, you know, performance by the defense when you have a performance from your offense like that. You know, you should be able to bank on getting a victory, especially with a coach like Todd Orlando, with some of the defensive talent that we have. But, you know, one of the things that continues to plague this team is the ability to stop the run. I think I saw, you know, Charles Omenihu after the game, you know, just completely dejected. And, you know, when asked kind of what happened, he basically just was saying we couldn't stop anything. And he's right. They had one running back have 9 carries for 121 yards and 2 touchdowns. The other running back, 17 carries for 94 yards. I mean, that's just not good. And you can't do that. You can't have a team be that balanced offensively when they have a quarterback like Will Greer, when they have a receiver like David Stills, who went 6 for 97 and 2 touchdowns. It's just, it's not a situation that you ever want to have your team be in at any point in time, but especially not in the Big 12. So, you know, that's been disappointing to see. And, you know, just kind of seeing how the game played itself out, you know, going into it, people asked me, you know, what I thought. And I was just kind of like, man, I really don't know. You know, I don't know what to expect from this team. Because, you know, I'd said it before, I feel like they've struggled a bit with handling prosperity. And, you know, now it looks like they're, you know, struggling some, you know, being on their heels and you know, going from, I guess, the hunters to being hunted. And now they're kind of somewhere in no man's land. But, you know, this offense certainly played well enough for a victory, and you would like the defense to come to play better. West Virginia was 7 of 12 on third down. So, I mean, that just kind of shows you, you know, above a 50% conversion rate there that, you know, you just never want to see. As a defense, you want to be able to get off the field on third down. You want to be able to stop the run. And it just seems like what I continue to see out there is the defensive line getting blown off the ball. Now, luckily, they had Chris Nelson back for this game. He was initially expected to have missed it. But, you know, whatever he did, he was able to get back out there. But just imagine if he hadn't played, you know, and I think that's going to be one of the big voids that's going to be left after this year. I mean, he's not a Puna Ford, but he is able to hold his own at the point of attack. And as you know, as this season is beginning to wind down with only 3 games left and then a bowl game, you know, you're really going to have to start asking some questions about what is this team going to, you know, begin to look like next year. And so it's been difficult to kind of pinpoint what the true issue is. But, you know, not getting some more, I guess, movement at the point of attack along the D-line has been an issue. You know, Charles Omenihu has kind of been the only one really to, you know, have any kind of success when it comes to, you know, getting to the passer in the way of sacks. Breckin Hager really hasn't had a great year. And, you know, Malcolm Roach has dealt with injuries. So, you know, it's just there hasn't been consistency from that second wave of guys to really be able to trust in. And that makes it harder on your guys in the back end. Linebackers have had trouble shedding tackles. You know, what is his name? Anthony Wheeler is he's built like a brick house, but every time I look up, an offensive lineman is latched onto him, and he's really got to be able to, get off of some of those blocks and be able to go in and, make a play for his defense. And, just time and time again, seeing him kind of get washed out has been difficult on the defense. I continue to think that for whatever reason, and I don't know the scheme that they're running or how it happens, but teams continue to pick on PJ Locke. I counted at least 3 missed tackles that he had. And that was another thing that I saw is that, guys are getting to the point of attack and they're not running their feet. It looks like they're, maybe trying to lay a big hit and, thinking that a person's just going to drop because of that. But you can't do that. These guys, Coach Reese, Carl Reese was the first defensive coordinator I had when I was on campus. And he used to always tell us, those other guys have scholarships too. And he's right, especially in a league like the Big 12 where you have such great offenses. You really have to run your feet, wrap up every single time. And the other thing I notice is sometimes when, it seems like one guy is there and it looks like he's going to make the tackle, sometimes the rest of the defense lets up. And again, that's just no way that a defense can perform at a high level, because you always have to have someone running to the ball. You always need to have the rest of the defense swarming out there. And that's where you see the best defenses, is when just looks like guys are just continually flying all over the field and are, in on every single tackle, on every single play, and it's multiple guys getting to the ball. There's an energy that comes with that. There's another level that gets reached when you can, coach your guys up in a manner that everybody is flying to the ball with reckless abandon and getting there with a bad attitude. And, I don't know what it is about this defense, but it just seems like there's been an issue all year in giving up big plays and not being able to stop the run and missing tackles and not being able to get off the field. I think there was only one fourth down that they faced this game. And luckily they did stand up in that instance. So it's good to see them do that, but you want to see them be able to do it consistently. So, tough loss, but, unfortunately they don't have very long to let something like that linger. And I will even say, you would like to think the game could have been a little different if, maybe Hager was able to play. Brandon Jones did something in the warmups at the hotel, I believe. And so that was, someone that they expected to have for the game that wasn't. So you never, want to be in a situation where, your starting safety is out. So they did move PJ Locke back to safety, who, I don't think, I think he's just one of those players that kind of ends up in no man's land where, he's struggled some in coverage against certain receivers just because he's not as fast as maybe you would like a corner to be. But at the same time, he's not rangy enough really at safety either. He's kind of a tweener in that respect. And so, it's going to be a challenge for this team as they go to Lubbock and, play against a rowdy Texas Tech team, which, we've struggled there in the past. I mean, everybody is aware of the Michael Crabtree game, where he had that, catch to end the game and, thwart some of Texas hopes that year. But that's not the only time, that Texas Tech has done that. They've traditionally played us pretty tough at Tech. And so it's going to be a tough contest. And it's actually pretty weird, what Bowman's injury is. They were talking about him having a collapsed lung. And, I feel like I'm hearing more and more of that with quarterbacks as of late. I heard that with Deshaun Watson and him not being able to fly and had to take, a 12-hour bus ride to Jacksonville earlier this year. From NFL perspective. So, it just seems like anytime you're dealing with something like that, You would probably, you know, not really want to have your guy out there like that. So I think it would really be, you know, something that Todd Orlando, if he is playing, is going to want to bring a lot of pressure. And I would think even with if Jet Duffy is the quarterback, that he would want to bring a lot of pressure and do whatever he can to, you know, prevent them from being comfortable. Now, the environment is going to be difficult. The Raiders are celebrating senior night. And so you always have, you know, an added effort in games like that. And believe it or not, Tech has won two of the past three of the games. So, you know, it's another issue where you would think Texas would be in a position to want to avenge, you know, their loss from last year and from the year before. But, you know, here we are looking at another team that doesn't really, you know, fear Tech, and so, or Texas rather. And then at the same time, it's the 10-year anniversary of that Michael Crabtree game where Graham Harrell found him, you know, with 1 second remaining on the clock when Texas was the number one team in the country. And I remember being there at that game, sitting in the end zone with my dad and watching it. And I think the play before, someone dropped an interception, and it might have been, I don't know, I don't want to say it was Blake Gideon, but I think it was. And whenever something like that happens in crucial moments of games like that, it's typically not going to end well for the opposing team, in my opinion. And so I remember just after he dropped the interception, sitting down and just kind of dropping my head into my hands and not even looking and just waiting until I heard the reaction from the crowd. And of course, they went nuts. It's always interesting when Tech and Texas play, because my dad went to Texas Tech. He played football for Texas Tech. And when I was getting recruited, I got recruited by most of the schools in the Big 12. But for whatever reason, Texas Tech kind of didn't make the connection that they had a former player whose, you know, son was decent in football. And that would be a pipeline that they would want to kind of continue to keep open. And so that had kind of pissed my dad off a good bit, because, you know, at the end of the day, he was going to support my decision either way. But I don't think he would have been mad at me if I had chosen to go to Texas Tech. I grew up a Texas Tech fan, have been to many a game at Jones Stadium. And so, you know, I know what these guys are going to be walking into there on Saturday night. So it'll be a challenge for them, you know, certainly going to be a challenge, going to be one that, you know, if they want to really make this season what it could be, they're going to have to win, because at least from, you know, now until the end of the game, end of the year, Texas can go into each of their games knowing that, you know, they're not having to worry about their quarterback living up to the play, but rather being more concerned about the defense. And, you know, I don't think if you had come into the season and told the casual observer that the offense would be humming along and it would be the defense that, you know, would still have to kind of get it together, you would probably trust Todd Orlando to do that more so than you would have Tim Beck and even Tom Herman to this point. So it's an interesting dynamic that they have going now. But if you win this game, it makes you 7-3. Then have an opportunity to win the final two games, be 9-3, and then potentially go into the bowl games with the 10-3 record. So it'll be good to see, you know, how this team comes out, how this team, you know, responds, and exactly what this team is going to do. From an injury standpoint, it looks like Brecken Hager practiced on Thursday and is expected to play. The big deal with him is just how much, you know, pain he's able to tolerate during the game. Devontae Davis was cleared to play. He didn't miss any practice this week. And then Brandon Jones is probably the one that is in most danger of potentially not playing. He's going to Lubbock with the team, and they're going to evaluate him on Friday and Saturday, see if he's able to go. Does look like, though, that Colin Johnson tweaked his knee during practice on Wednesday. And so they expect him to play, but they're going to continue to evaluate him on Friday, see how he's feeling. You certainly don't want to, you know, go into an hostile environment like that without all your bullets. But if there were to be a spot, you know, where Texas could potentially suffer an injury and maybe be okay, it would probably be at wide receiver. So that'll be something to monitor, you know, see how the guys respond. But I think LaJordan Humphrey could easily slide out to the X and not too much of a drop off be experienced there. And then you probably would have why is his name escaping me? Jerod Hurd getting some more time on the field. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the game. You know, like I said, I'll be coming out of a deer stand. Hopefully would have already had a kill under my belt. Looking forward to see how these guys show up, how they respond, how they, you know, begin to try to close out their season. Because at this point, we're on the backside of it. You know, they only have three left. And so, you know, it's going to be all hands on deck. Certainly going to take a concentrated team effort for them to come out of Lubbock with the victory. But, you know, if they all come to play, if they wrap up, if they try to limit, you know, the big plays and take care of the ball, I think they should win this game. This is a game they should win fairly easily. But, you know, with this team, you never know. So that's going to do it for this week and for this 10th edition of the Until the Whistle podcast. Again, thanks to folks at the Yak for the opportunity. Hope everybody is, you know, having a good week and ready to go into the weekend. If you are going to be in a deer stand yourself, please let me know where you're going to be and how you fare. Always interested to talk about hunting and things like that. And I think that's going to do it. So, for another episode of Until the Whistle, I am your host, Marcus Myers, and I will catch you guys the next time the whistle blows.